Take a look on page 89, bottom left. The Midrash writes, in respect to the event of Matan Torah here in Parshas Yisro, Alisa Lamaram, you went up into the high places, that's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lakachta Matanos, and you took gifts. The Lakicha Nidna, the Torah was given with an act of Lakicha, and Lakicha really refers to a transaction. That means a transaction has occurred. To take, literally, but a transaction. So the Midrash asks, Yochol shetzoret litein damen. So perhaps if it's a transaction, you have to give money for it. Maybe you have to pay for the Torah in order to get it. Talmud Lomar, rather, it says, the pasuk says, matanos, it is a gift. So this is the Midrash is presenting this idea of it being a transaction, the mention of money, but then the rejection of that, and rather it's a gift. And he wants to work with these couple ideas. Pirish, this means, Kivadai hascholas hakol, certainly the beginning of all things, sorich lihios b'mishpat, it must be with a sense of justice, al pi avodas ha'adam, according to the work and the effort of a human being. But you can't start with something that's entirely free. There has to be some measure of human effort. And that's mishpat. Mishpat is justice, means that you did something and you get something in return. That's only fair. It's only just. The Alzeh Amru, and about this, our Chachamim said, Kol haschalos kashos. All beginnings are difficult. All beginnings are difficult, the Chachamim said. And he says that this means because the beginning has to have some measure of human effort, which means some difficulty. V'amru, and the Chachamim said, this fits into our banquet theme coming up, Pischuli kahuda shalmacha, open up for me according to the point of a needle, Hashem says, and then I will open up for you the breadth of an entire sanctuary. And so we have to make some opening. Hashem doesn't say, I'll just give it all to you. Just open up something, even if it's the breadth of a needle, the point of a needle. Do something to make an opening, and then I will open up for you like the breadth of a sanctuary. Shekisha'odam zocha kitzas, lidavekus ha-Torah, that when a person merits even a small bit to cling to Torah, a little bit, he makes an opening. Shuv mitzad ha-Torah atzma himatnas chinam. Then after that, the Torah itself will shower him with a gift which is free, so to speak. Page 89.
Is he saying that if we give a little, God gives a lot?
Right. Yeah. So there has to be something there. Mm-hmm. We have to open something up. And once it's open, then we can receive really way out of proportion to what our initial act was. So there is a deservedness there. That's based on our effort. But we receive much more than we necessarily opened up. And he says this is the power of Torah. That's what it means, a matnas chinam, a free gift, is that after we've created the initial opening, then we'll be showered with this. The Shorash HaDevorim says, what is the source for this dynamic? Kibi techila misnahig hakol b'midas hadin, achar kaf nishtatev imo midas harachamim, kamosha upasu b'inyan b'riyas olam. That at the beginning, things are conducted according to midas hadin, which is to say, judgment and justice. That's how things start out, with judgment. Then after din enters, then comes rachamim, compassion. As it says in the beginning of creation, that Hashem at first thought of creating the world with the midah of din, of strict judgment. He saw that the world could not exist on this, so therefore he combined the midah of rachamim. He was meshatev, he joined rachamim to din. But we see still, it's not that God changed his mind, but he wanted there to be a little bit of din at the beginning. Some type of effort that could be returned. And then comes the rachamim. L'chein b'chol inyanim k'dela'el parasha shemos v'era. He says the same process works all the way through, as we have mentioned earlier. K'kol e'la hema madrego zu l'mala mizu. Each one of these is a certain madrega in a relationship. K'bavadai misha HaKadosh Baruch Hu misnahe gimo b'midas harachamim. Certainly, a person who God relates to with compassion, yesh lo shaychis v'makom hazeh, she'ein shom hamira, l'fi sechar ma'aseh ha'adam. This person is getting the rachamim, he's getting God's compassion because he fits there. In other words, he's saying what I think is a chiddush here, that midas harachamim, that's receiving God's attention in his relationship, even though we may not be entirely deserving, but we are deserving enough for rachamim. If we find ourselves receiving rachamim, that means that is our makam. Our way to receive God's blessing is through rachamim, through compassion. Amnam limso shaychis lezos ha-madrega, hu al yidei yigiyah rabba v'yiras Hashem. Because, okay, so what does it take to be able to be one who receives rachamim? Because that's not for free either. So it takes a lot of hard work, and it takes a lot of yiras Hashemayim, a lot of odd heaven. So we'll get a lot more than we put in, but it still takes a lot of hard work and a lot of yiras Hashemayim.
I can understand it from the perspective of leading a certain lifestyle. You know, running, Misha, Mitzvah. But also it appears that I've seen instances of compassion from just the opposite.
And that's a different level of Hanhaga. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu asks in the Torah of Hashem, show me your ways, let me know your ways. And Hashem tells him, "V'chanosi es asher achon, v'richamti es asher arachin." I will have compassion on whoever I choose. And the Chachamim say whether they are deserving or not. That's a different level of rachamim, where there's apparently not a deserving or a deservedness at all. Right. But Hashem, for His own reasons and His own considerations, has infinite compassion. In a number of situations that we can't grab. So that's not what he's referring to here. But that does exist.
So this
thank God.
I'm also a leader.
He's saying here that we have to be zochet somewhat to rachamim too. So this is a kind of rachamim which depends on human effort, but it's much more so, like we were saying with Bob earlier, that our effort really calls for it. But there's another kind of rachamim which may be entirely removed from our efforts at all. Shemizeh zocha achar kach l'midas harachamim. That hard work and that yiras Hashem brings a person to merit rachamim. Shehu ikar haTorah, shalzeh nemar b'matana nitna. This is the ikar of Torah, as it says here in the Midrash, that it was given as a gift. It was given as a gift after we made the transaction, meaning we did something. V'zelokachta, that's what it means. First, you took it. Alisa lamorim, you went up to heaven. The Mishnah quoted, "Lokachta, you took it." That's the initial human effort. Matonos, and after you've made that effort, it becomes a gift. So, if we look back on the Midrash that he quoted in light of his idea, he mentioned a couple of things. The Torah was given b'lekicha; it was a transaction. The Midrash said, well, a transaction requires some money, you got to pay for it. And then they answered, no, it's a gift. But the truth is that all three are true. It is a transaction, we have to pay for it. What's the payment? Our effort, our yigiyah, our yiras Hashemayim. That's a little bit of money which is required. And after that, when we've opened up like the point of the needle, the rest comes as a matana. Also remember that this applies level after level. It doesn't just stop. Like we make one opening and then Hashem gives us a gift and it's all over. We have to continue to make that little opening over and over again at a new level, and then Hashem showers us with another gift of Torah.
Is that the point of a needle or the opening of a needle?
Well, kahuda shamatha really means the point of a needle. Even though when you see that translated, it's usually translated as the opening of a needle. But it really, really says huda, and hud means its point. Just the little, the first little pierce of the needle, that little pinhole. That's
more.
Not to be confused with a pinhead. Which
doesn't
fit you.
That's a more emphatic analogy.
I think so. Kahuda shamatha, just that's the really the tip of the needle. That's just a very small. That's even smaller than the opening that you put the thread.
Seen that be simply someplace.
But you know what's interesting? Right, I said it's on the invitation for our banquet. You know what's interesting? That first puncture of the needle, right? It takes a little bit of a, you know? You can't just gently push the needle in. If you think about a fabric or something, it has to have a little bit of a like, you know, a motion of effort. Think about skin. You know?
But that's okay in my mind. Yeah. Yeah.
I was thinking about fabric. No, that was my.
Well, I came to mind the effort of putting in an IV.
Yeah, at first. Mm-hmm.
And once you get through that, then
it all flows.
That flows, yeah. And you get healed.
There's an interesting story about a rabbi, I forget his name. At the turn of the century, in Europe, there was. With the period of enlightenment, Haskalah, with Jews going to secular universities and stuff, and they say, oh, now we know what everything means, and that is now all the Jews that were that mirrors and yarmulkes and long coats, they live in the really old ages.
Old fashioned.
They're not connected at all to what's going on. So this one rabbi, you know, said, it's interesting how much you know. He says, now you know that a knife cuts butter. He says, why doesn't butter cut a knife? Or, you know, he took opposites. He just kept switching. He says, why is it this way and not this way? Why is it this way and not this way? And he says, now you don't have an answer for that, do you? He says, but if you learn long enough, you'll find the answer. This is, God has reasons for all these things working the way that they do. And you're not going to find the answers in universities.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about the needle
piercing
the brush.
I want to give take a quick look at a short minor here, then we'll move on to one more, but it just kind of captured my attention. It's on page 91, and it's on the right-hand column, towards the bottom, about six lines up, the pasuk. In the pasuk in the Torah, which says, B'chol ha'am ro'im es ha'kolos. The entire nation saw the sounds. That's an unusual pasuk. What does it mean that we saw the sounds? Here she says, K'mo shekasu v'anochi Hashem elokecha. The Torah writes, I am Hashem, your God. Sh'ra'u b'nei Yisrael, kol echad. Each Jewish person saw es shoresh chiyusa. The very source of their life. The Jewish people perceived the source of their being. V'ra'u ayin ba'ayin, and they saw with their very eyes. Chelek nishmas Hashem mimal sheyesh l'kol echad, the portion of the neshama from God that they actually had. That's quite a vision. That they were able to see the source of their soul in Shemayim. It was not necessary for them to believe in the Ten Commandments. Rak ra'u es ha'kol, because they saw them. That's not believing anymore. When you see what it means and you know what it is and how the very source of your life is coming to you through this revelation of Torah, Shekafu kasher Hashem dover, that just as God speaks, so it is. And they saw it in Revelation. He says, this is no longer considered belief, this is seeing what things actually are.
A nice sort of extension of the idea, what Matan Torah adds to Shir Shalyam, because it's the Aminu Hashem of Moshe.
And this is beyond
Aminu.
This is not knowing, because if they saw it.
This is all the people.
Yeah. The Kol Echad, it says that the entire Jewish people, the Kol Ha'am, the entire nation, each and every person saw the source of their soul in heaven.
What does that mean?
Ooh, I don't know. I really don't know what that means.
What is the source of their soul?
Well, the way he's describing it in general terms refers to their relationship with God. A person understood their unique place in respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He describes it, the neshama that Hashem gave to them at its source.
The amount at the highest point.
Right, so they grasp that. And we could call it in our terms, you know, ultimate purpose, ultimate identity. They had a glimpse of what all that really was.
Regardless of what was going to happen.
Right.
And they accepted
right.
it.
Right.
So if a guy said, my purpose is to die 15 minutes later after this, but he saw that and they could accept that. And or whatever
I would suppose, yeah. I would suppose that, yeah.
And yet, are we supposed to deal with it? This isn't like...
It's not conventional.
They weren't seeing the future, were they?
No, they were seeing reality. And you know, reality in that respect is above time. It's above time.
So that didn't have anything to do with it. They wouldn't know what was going to happen in that.
It could play itself out in time, and it would, because our purpose in life does play itself out through time.
Is this related to the collective revelation of Yashir?
Yeah, in Oz Yashir, it was also a collective revelation of Klal Yisrael. But it seems to me that there, the revelation they had was one of Hashem's salvation and His ultimate, final, complete control of all things. That He intervened in nature. A midah came down called Atik, which was over and above anything they had ever experienced. Mm-hmm. This seems to be an understanding of their relationship with Hashem.
Yeah, Hashem had to come first, and this came
right.
And what's the
right.
Place?
Well, that was God's power of salvation, and this is Hashem's almost His plan in respect to each individual.
First, they had to recognize Hashem,
yeah.
Recognize His plan.
Yeah,
the other way,
and their purpose in it.
The other way I think about this this thing is that if you have through a whole Yetzias Mitzrayim, you have like the formation of the Klal. Klal Yisrael, that then comes to its highest point, Ke'ish Echad B'Lev Echad, at the base of Har Sinai. And then he says, V'Kol Echad. He says that here we're back to sort of the idea of a prat, every individual. After, at sort of the highest point of Klal, sort of having an expression of the individual. That's right.
Yes, Josh? They knew at a level beyond Emunah.
Right, they saw it.
Saw it.
And that means a prophetic, you know, a nevuah that they saw. It wasn't seeing with the eye of flesh, it was seeing with the eye of HaSeichel and a prophetic vision of these things.
More of a knowing.
Yeah.
In a sense. But,
yeah.
But at our level now, we're only, I mean, this, that was beyond Emunah, but the question I have is, so we're only expected to reach a level that's of a Buddha.
Yeah. That's what we are expecting.
So, I mean, this would make me suspect somebody who says that he's seen what his purpose is in life more.
I think it could happen. But you have the pasuk Biyodata Hayam Bahashivasa Elavavecha, you shall know and take it to your heart, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim.
What you should be concerned about is the guy who says he knows what your purpose is. That's
the guy to watch out for.
That had enough time.
I think some people have a glimpse of that. I don't think that it's complete. But some more so than others. I think I've met people who've had a pretty good handle on what their purpose is in life, and it's a lot of self-understanding. And maybe that's just their teva, and Hashem granted them that. Okay. Let's take a look on 93, on the bottom of the page. Bottom left. page 93. The pasuk Vayashav Moshe, the pasuk says that Moshe returned back to the Jewish people. Anochi bo eilecha ba'av ha'anon, Hashem says, I will come to you in a cloud, in a thick cloud. Then Vayaged Moshe, and then Moshe spoke everything over to the Jewish people. So he went up there, he experienced this extreme level of closeness to God like no other human being ever experienced. And then he came back to the people, and he said what he had to say, gave it over. Lahodiyah chivaso shamoshe rabbeinu. This is to make known the love of Moshe. Im ki no de lo, even though that he knew, sheyihi yalo kamo nechisas darga, that this would be for him somewhat of a lowering of his own personal state. Nechisas darga, that means coming down in madrega. Kamo shekosu ba'av he'onan. As the Torah writes, Moshe Rabbeinu was up there in a thick cloud, a closeness to God that was unmatched in history. Now what did he have to do?
What does the word ba'av mean?
Also thick cloud, right. Now av can also mean cloud itself. Mm-hmm. So it means a thick cloud. So Moshe Rabbeinu, in order to convey what he experienced at Har Sinai, he had to, quote unquote, both literally and conceptually, come down to the people. He went up to a madrega that was beyond anything. He had to come back down to the people, to where they were, to give over what he had. And one could say that Moshe Rabbeinu then, well, maybe he had a hard time with that. I'm going to have to lower myself, so to speak, to give this over to the Jewish people. No. Now, as a matter of fact, not only is it not a sin, but it's even an even higher madrega that he came down totally willingly, with no hesitation whatsoever.
Right, you don't have to
That's what he wanted to say.
My question was, you don't have to slip.
He didn't have to slip, right.
You don't have to do anything. Okay,
no.
You can actually just come down.
Right. This is an intentional, an active will.
Forget it, you can't do
that. is it like he almost had to contract? Like we say that Hashem had to...
A similar idea in
a physical sense for a human being.
He had to confine his own madrega and limit it in order to give it over to Bnei Yisrael. And that's what he says, Ba'avur tovas Bnei Yisrael, for the sake of good of the Jewish people. Mul kein modiyah hakosu vayaged Moshe. So that's why the Torah tells us that he went ahead and he told it all over. That he did not consider, it was not considered for him any ulterior motive whatsoever. He had no difficulty with taking everything he had and then presenting it all to the people. That was fine with Moshe. Kamoshe kasuv chazal api apasuk, as the chachamim write about the pasuk, vayered min hahor el ha'am, that Moshe went right down from the mountain to the people. He didn't come down and then get involved in all of his own personal dealings. He had no complaints whatsoever. So this is interesting, right? A person goes and they experience a great revelation. Now they got to go back and tell it over to the people, right? So he has, what do? You go to a hotel for a little while, you relax, you synthesize your experience, you get a nice massage. I got to do what I got to do. I have to give it over to the people. Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayered Moshe min hahor el ha'am. There was no transition necessary for him.
Sure there was. There had to be a transition.
Well, he came down. That was the transition.
Right.
But I mean, he didn't need to take a break and deal with himself. He just was prepared right down, to go right down and present it to the people. Yeah, the transition was that he came down and he presented it. But he accepted that entirely.
Right, but he could, I don't think he could have, he was in two worlds simultaneously. He was in the world of Hashem, which as you said, takes mm-hmm. them out to a mm-hmm. totally mm-hmm. different place for everybody else. And then he had to come back to
right.
the world of people.
Right. And he had to leave that madrega of the thick cloud. He had to actually go away from it.
Willingly. Hashem said, okay,
Hashem did instruct him to go back, but the Torah is teaching us, according to the Svara Sama, that he did that without any hesitation, without any complaint.
Yeah, so somewhere there's a transition that takes place.
Yes, I think I misstated that.
There has to be a transition
right.
that takes place.
He made the transition from up there to where he had to go down to the people. That was the transition. But what I meant to say is that he did not have to deal with his own emotional conflicts about making this transition.
But Hashem brought him up to a certain level
right.
to be able to communicate with them.
Right.
And then he had to come down to a different level to communicate with
to the Bnei Yisrael, right. And in a certain way, I think Bruce is bringing out this concept too, there's a parallel idea there. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was a great man, but Hashem had to come down to talk to Moshe. Hashem had to come down from where from his, you know, lofty place way up there, wherever that is, beyond anything we could ever even think about. He came down to talk to Moshe. So Moshe Rabbeinu, in a certain way, he emulated God.
I think there's also a really beautiful thing mm-hmm. here, that here it is, most of the time when somebody receives a valuable asset, one, they're reluctant to give it over, and two, when you usually give over something that has value, you usually diminish what you have.
Mm-hmm.
And here, it's just the opposite. You know, I'm taking it that he didn't diminish. Not only did he give over this valuable asset and willingly give it over, he didn't diminish.
No.
It had to increase everybody
right.
because
right.
here it is with just Moshe having it.
Right.
It had, you know, and then but when everybody had it, it increased. Usually when you give something, you know, if you pour water out of a glass or you take gold dust out of a bag or
anything,
something's gone. But here, you're spending something in a sense and you're increasing.
Right. Like the motion of a fire. When you light one fire from another and the original fire is not lacking anything.
Something puzzles me a little bit here. By Abraham, when Hashem is visiting him and then he goes to take care to greet the guests, so we have Gadol Hachnasas Orachim Yoser Mikabalas Pnei Ashkin. So it seems to imply that Avram didn't, you know, Avram was with the Shekhinah, experiencing a certain madrega of closeness and left that, but it doesn't seem to imply that it was a yerida necessarily.
Right.
Whereas here it seems to apply that that there was yerida.
I think this is the idea. He's saying that it may appear as a yerida, as a descent. But the truth is that it's an aliyah. And it was the same thing there with Avraham Avinu and the Malachim. That no, for those who were observing this, that he walked away from God. When Moshe came down from the mountain, he's coming down. But the truth is that in the total person, the willingness to do that and walk away
is an
aliyah. And that's similar to the Gemara, I think, in Megillah, where it cites that Mordechai is listed later amongst the Chachamim. And he went down a level. So how did he go down a level amongst the Chachamim? Because he had to spend his time saving the Jewish people, so he went down in his learning.
Right.
He wasn't able to spend as much time in the Torah. He had to bother himself with saving Klal Yisrael.
But that
so
was
he went down, right?
But that was Torah.
But not the study of Torah.
Right,
se.
But it really is the essence
it's the living
of Torah.
To, well, that's, and that's the point. That his going down in Talmud Torah was really, for his whole person, it was an aliyah. So he came down in his learning, look, whatever that means, he was still the Gadol Hador.
The bottom line is he
but
was
as
raised.
A human being,
yeah.
he became bigger.
But only to the people around him did he go down
right.
in his learning.
Right.
Right, not to himself.
His person became bigger.
Right.
I was seeing something this morning, was saying that just like you were saying, Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that they voluntarily sort of contracted their greatness in order to have it be an influence throughout all time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very beautiful kind
mm-hmm.
of thought.
So that's a real mysterious nefesh. You know, a person's willing to do that in order for the Klal to be so open.
But the children.
What about the...
We saw that.
By Noah Chanafah, that's what Hashem was talking about.
With the famous Rav and the son in the cave, when they came out and they were...
They're out of the right? It was too much.
Right.
They couldn't deal with the people.
Right.
So it was a higher madriga.
You didn't want to go into Paschim.
And then go back into the cave.
Right.
And then be able to go out and deal with people. That was a higher level.
Right.
To be able to deal with
people. Just pocket burned that you're going to burn with.
But to finish off this memory here.
Good dinner.
Take care.
Hello.
Rak samach b'tovas and shol Yisrael. So Moshe didn't have any complaints in his heart for having to, so to speak, go down. But to the contrary, he rejoiced in that he was going to benefit the Jewish people. K'moshe reinu achar kach d'chsiv v'yamod ha'am be'rachov k'moshe nigash. As it says, the people stood from afar and Moshe came before God. Michlal ki mitodem lo haya ola kol kach v'tovas v'shoy Yisroel. But following this, it says, the people stood back and then Moshe drew close. He says, we can infer from here that prior to this, lo haya ola kol kach v'tovas v'shoy Yisroel, that he had not gone so high for the sake of the Jewish people, k'moshe kasuv makom acher, pirish karevata ushma. So again, a similar idea, that our inference is that he was willing to go to high places and then to come back to the Jewish people and be able to give over this.
But this is a good, really a good lesson. It seems, maybe I'm wrong with this, but just my first thought is it seems that this is the first instance and the first lesson that we learn of a succession of teachers. You know, it's not just Abraham and Yaakov and all that, just as one person being basically the patriarch. You know, the same thing that Yithro said to Moshe, that he got to give up a little, and he had to create judges and teachers, you know, to listen to him. This seems to be, and the lesson, you know, that Moshe received from Hashem, the Torah from Hashem, and he had to come down and give it over. It was like the first instance of creating a, you know, the Torah being through to all the people, being passed down from generation to generation. It's like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very nice.
Shabbat.